Welcome back to Words of the Wise. I'm your host, Lexi Maynor, and today's episode is a special re-release from my senior year at DePaul. The conversation you're about to hear is with someone who changed the course of my college journey and continues to shape my career today. Larry Abid, Director of TV Operations at DePaul, is more than a mentor. He's the kind of person who meets you exactly where you are, sees your potential even when you don't, and gives you the confidence to chase it. Larry guided me through some of my most formative years, and now, as I work back on campus, I'm lucky enough to still learn from him. This is one of my favorite interviews, and I'm thrilled to share it with you again. Without further ado, here's the legend himself, Larry Abid.
Hello, I'm Larry Abid. I'm 67 years old. I'm director of TV operations, and I teach a TV production class here at DePaul University, and I'm on my 21st year here.
Wow. So we're going to start off by talking about your childhood. So first, I'm going to ask you, what were your parents like?
Okay. I come from very, very humble beginnings. I grew up in Detroit. My dad was a welder. My mom was a waitress. We had five kids in the family, so there wasn't a lot of money around. What was fun is that at that time, and we're talking the 50s and 60s, every family had like eight kids. Mm-hmm. So you walked outside. In fact, you were expected to spend all day outside back in that culture. Uh-huh. They didn't want you in the house. They wanted you out. And we had this, and probably every city had the same rule. The street lights come on at about 7 or 8 o'clock. And the rule is you had to be, because your parents never knew where you were. They never knew you where you were. But you had to be home by 7 or 8 o'clock or when those street lights came on. Anybody that's old knows that phrase.
So you grew up in Detroit and you spent most of your days outside.
Oh, yeah.
But how would you describe, like, from start to finish, what the typical day in your childhood looked like?
Well, I was kind of a rebellious kid.
I'm shocked.
I mean, you know, it was get up and go to school, and I hated school. And then when we came home, it's actually pretty simple. When I came home, we just went outside and played the rest of the day and, you know, got up the next morning and started it all again.
Yeah. And did you say how many siblings you have?
I had five.
Okay, five. And where did you fall in that order?
Okay, so I have an older brother that is six years older than me, a older sister who is 4 years older than me. I have another older sister who is 2 years older than me. Then there is me, and then I have a younger brother who's 2 years younger than me.
Okay, so you're one of the middle kids.
Definitely a middle child all the way through.
And did you like being in the middle?
I don't know what it is to be in any other order. I wasn't the oldest. I wasn't the youngest. I don't know if I'd like being the oldest, only because they seem to have a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
So, and being the baby of the family definitely has its perks. But I think the middle child thing really helped me in terms of becoming, I would say, more social. You're good with people. I think most middle children are good with
pretty
people.
Pretty easygoing.
Good, can, you know, navigate through life with people pretty well.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And do you have, like, a favorite childhood memory or something that stands out to you?
I thought about this for a while. Now, not every childhood memory is a great memory. But I probably have told this story a million times just because it's so unusual. Mm-hmm. I was probably about 11, which made my younger brother probably 9. And we had a bully that lived right across the street from us. Oh. He was always in fights. He was not a good dude.
Yeah.
When he walked down the street, we walked on the other side of the street. Well, one day we were in somebody's yard and we were playing dodgeball. And I don't know how he ended up in that game. And he grabbed the dodgeball, and my brother was probably about 3 feet away from him, and he threw it at him with all his might and hit him right in the face. Oh.
Oh, my God.
I went berserk. No, seriously. I had an out-of-body experience. I went after this guy, which normally I would have never gone after this guy. And I remember this stuff as clear as day. I remember watching my fist just take off without even thinking about it and hitting this guy square in the face. Now, I'm not trying to, you know, advocate violence or anything, but this was the situation I was in. And then my other one, I would just like watch it take off and hit this guy in the face. I never missed. Every time I swung, I hit this guy in the face. I think he was shocked. And he never laid a glove on me. It was like a miracle. We tussled around a little bit, and he said, okay, let's just call this done. And I agreed. So luckily, because I still couldn't believe I just did what I just did. But that wasn't the crazy part. The crazy part was the next day. So I went to school the next day, and he walked up to me, and he shook my hand. And from that day on, he was the nicest person you ever met. He was my best friend. He was my brother's best friend. He was everybody on the block's best friend. He was generous. He was kind. Whatever you think of as a best friend,
was
he
him.
Became that. All from that incident.
So he just needed someone to...
I don't know. I'm sure a therapist could have a ball with that.
Yeah.
But to this day, I don't... Having gone through it, I'm still in amazement that that all occurred. Me... winning that fight where there had no way. That guy outweighed me. He fought everybody. I fought nobody.
Yeah.
And then for the next day, for him to make that kind of crazy turn.
Wow.
No.
Yeah.
I always tell that story because I just think that story is amazing.
That is amazing.
So there's my childhood story.
That's great. And did you have any hobbies that you would do a lot when you were a kid?
I was sports. Mm-hmm. Because I was good. It wasn't that I didn't like school. It's that I was really good at sports. So I went with what I was really good at.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helped me a lot in Detroit because people respect athletes there.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, even when I moved out of Detroit and went to my next school, actually my entire life, every time I've moved away from home and moved to another city, I always got involved with other sports teams because I was, and I'm not saying this out of ego, I was generally one of the better guys on the team, if not the best guy on the team. But that was always my way in, mm-hmm. in terms of building a social life if I ever moved. I always knew I could get on a sports team, and I would find some sort of family within that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so yeah, sports. I was a baseball pitcher all my life.
Okay. And then moving on to more like high school, and this probably goes hand in hand with your sports background, but what did the typical Saturday night in high school look like for you?
Well, by this time we had moved to the burbs.
Okay.
And it was much more fun because I just had much more access. In Detroit, you had to be careful when you were in Detroit. You had to be careful on the way to school. You had to be careful on the way home. You had to be careful during school. That's why our education wasn't the best in Detroit, because your mind wasn't on education. It was really trying to get yourself through the day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by that time, we went to the burbs. And that way I got to participate on sports teams. I met a lot of friends. I kind of had this popularity because I was from Detroit for God knows what reason. But I was popular because of that. And I was a good athlete. You know, they like good athletes. That's where, and you know, the other thing that really struck me there, and it really shows you the difference between growing up in a kind of city that's on its way down and moving to the suburbs, is I met people that were going to college.
Mm.
I mean, I had never thought about going to college.
Really?
I thought I would be an auto worker, just like my dad and brothers and uncles and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about college. And then when I moved out to the suburbs and all my classmates were going to college, it did something to me. I've been trying to put a name. I wouldn't call it shame for that, but just like, I don't know. It's like I should be going to college, but I never even thought about that before.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to what we did on Saturday night, we probably did the same thing, you know.
Anyone does.
You did.
Yeah.
Lexi. I mean, we went out with our friends and one time at a homecoming, we built a dinosaur as our junior float for the homecoming parade.
Uh-huh.
And then when it was done, we had to get rid of it, and we didn't take it apart, so we dragged it out to some farmer's field. Hey, this was not my idea. And they just burnt it.
This
thing was
dinosaur.
Gigantic.
Yeah.
It was all made of paper plates. Oh, yeah. That's what we did on a Saturday night.
Sounds like a good time. And did you have a job growing up?
You know, I delivered papers, which I had bad dreams about that for 20 years. I hated delivering papers. It was redundant. It's like working at a factory. You're doing the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. I hated that. And then I worked at a couple of, like, stores doing stock work. So, yeah, I kind of always did something. And if I had nothing to do, my dad always had kind of side jobs that he did. And he would always take me with him on that and mm-hmm. pay me, like, a quarter. I mean, you know,
yeah, money. Yeah, I mean.
A quarter in those days were probably $5 now, but okay, yeah. So he didn't pay me much, but I learned a lot.
Yeah. And this is the last question in this childhood section. What would you say is the greatest thing that your parents taught you?
My dad, because again, I grew up in a, you know, during the 50s, which my dad grew up and my mom during the Depression.
Okay.
So a lot of them did not finish school because they had to figure out some way of helping their families make it through that mm-hmm. time. So my dad only finished eighth grade. My mom did finish high school. But one thing I think my dad, especially my dad, always preached education, even though he didn't have much of one. I think going back to that, moving out to the suburbs and finding out that all your friends are going to college, you didn't even thought about it. Mm-hmm. I think my dad felt the same way. I think he felt, I don't know, I don't know what the word would be, but I think he felt, you know, a bit of a shame and like he missed out on school. And he wanted us to value education. And it was funny because as soon as my kids came down the chute, they knew they were going to college,
yeah.
you know. But that wasn't it for me, you know. Mm-hmm. That was just something that my parents really valued, is that we got a good education.
Yeah. And that's a good transition into the next topic, which is college. So you've never thought about going to college until you moved.
Until we moved, yeah.
Yeah. So where did you end up going for undergrad, and what made you decide to go there?
This is actually another really interesting story. Well, most of the people that lived in Detroit were all auto workers or worked at factories that supplied the auto workers.
Mm-hmm.
So most of us could not afford to go to a four-year university.
Yeah.
But there was this great community college there called Macomb Community College. It's still there. It's spread all over. It's a great community college. But they were basically a college prep.
Mm-hmm.
They taught you how to move on to be a junior at a major
kinda
university.
Kind of like an Ivy Tech.
Yeah, but I'm not hating on Ivy Tech.
No.
But this Macomb has a great reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of my friends, and they all became draftsmen and designers and owner of their own companies. All of us started at community college.
Wow.
And at that time, I wanted to teach and coach.
Okay.
So, yeah. And at that time, there were no males in elementary school teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So you could walk into any elementary school and get a job. So that's what I was going to do. I was going to go teach elementary school and then coach baseball at the high school.
Yeah. Okay. And then where did you end up going if you only spent those? Did you only spend like 2 years at the community college?
Yeah. That was interesting. I spent 2 years at community college, transferred to Oakland University, started teaching third grade, and I hated it.
Oh, no.
You know, I did not like. That's why I always tell people, have a plan B.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you'll follow and have dreams. And sometimes you'll follow those dreams, get there, and you realize they're nothing like you thought it mm-hmm. would be. So always have a plan B. I did not have a plan B. That's what I was going to do.
Yeah.
So when that did not turn out, I was lost. I'm not like you. I admire you guys. You go to college because you go to college, uh-huh. you know? Where me, I needed a reason to go to college and a reason to do all that work.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have one. So I dropped out of college. I dropped out of college for about 6 years, but I will tell you, it was the best thing for me. I matured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I took economics and I had struggled through economics because I knew nothing about economics. After 6 years of having a job and paying bills and reading the newspaper, that completely changed me. And when I finally went back to school, which was at Michigan State, I was much more prepared and I paid for my own school.
All right. And what did you do during that 6 year period?
I walked the earth.
Okay.
I just kind of lived my life and tried to find another goal. I've never been fired from a job, but I had a lot of jobs trying. I tried retail. I tried construction. I was just trying to find myself.
Uh-huh.
But what did I want? What did I what was going to make me happy in terms of a career, and I could not find one at all. Nothing made me happy. It was so, I mean, I don't even like thinking about that part of those years because I was so, disappointed wouldn't be the word. It was just I couldn't find something that I thought I would really love to do. And that was extremely frustrating.
Yeah, I'm sure.
When I went to Michigan State back up, in between those years, I had lived in Denver. And during all my years in elementary and junior high and high school, I always did audiovisual work. So for the school play, I'd do the lights or pull the curtains. And if somebody needed a projector delivered to their classroom and set up, I would have that job at some school that I went to. Uh-huh. So I was kind of head of audiovisual stuff no matter where I went, just because I dug it. And so when I moved to Denver, because Denver's such a convention town, mm-hmm. that there's a lot of these types of equipment that's required. So I was an employee at a company that supplied that equipment. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of carried over that audiovisual experience to another, that type of job, to that type of job.
Yeah.
And then when I went to Michigan State, I saw a bunch of, like, so what happens when these conventions would come to Denver, a lot of them were new product conventions. So yeah. Samsonite would come out with a whole line of suitcases, and they would show, all their reps would come to Denver, and they would show everybody their new products.
Yeah.
Well, some of those presentations were awesome.
I'm sure.
And I thought, that's what I want to do.
Uh-huh.
I want to make those kind of commercials or presentations.
Yeah.
Because it was creative, and that seemed to really kind of turn me on.
Oh, for some reason.
So when I got to Michigan State, by that time, VHS came in, videotaping came in, and the only thing that even came close to that type of work was television. So I thought, okay, I'll try television, and I'll see if I like it. And it was absolute marriage made in heaven.
Yeah, and what year was that when you first came to Michigan State?
God. I don't remember, but I want to say 89.
Okay. That would make sense then with the...
Yeah, with a six-year, yeah.
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 Yeah, so then what year did you graduate from Michigan State? That'd be like 93 or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Somewhere around there. And then the reason I hesitate is because I went on and got a master's degree, too.
Oh, okay.
Which is really funny because I didn't think I was capable of getting a master's degree.
Well, and
I
mean, you didn't like school. Yeah,
you
hated school.
So going to I thought you had to be like a genius to get a master's degree.
Uh-huh.
I met some guy who had 14 books. No. I don't know if I want to read 14 books. So, but I was... crazy to say, I was cum laude for bachelor's degree and cum laude for my master's degree. I never knew I was smart. I mean, I knew I was smart.
Smart, but you
but
didn't.
Not school
you
smart.
Just didn't apply yourself
not
when
all,
you were younger.
At
yeah.
all. You know?
I feel like that happens a lot, though.
Yeah, kind of walk the earth and find yourself. That's why I love when you guys, hey, go right from undergrad to grad school or beyond that. My point being, starting college right after high school is great. But I think any time that you take some time to grow
mm-hmm.
is a good thing.
Yeah.
Going for your bachelor's degree after high school is great, but they would love for you to get some life experience before you come back and get a master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll take your money. So you want to come back.
Yeah.
But they'd like you to bring some of that life experience in the mm-hmm. class. And by the time I had gone for my master's degree, I was out in the world for a little while, and I enjoyed college so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And since it was a master's degree, the classes were super small, like six people. Mm-hmm. I had classes of 300 people in my undergrad.
Yeah, I'm sure.
In grad degree, it was really small classes. So you had these really cool class discussions.
Yeah.
And you can really, much like you guys here, you get to know the teacher really
uh-huh.
well. They get to know you really well.
And
I really liked that. And I also thought a master's degree was way easier than an undergrad. much less list this, define that, much more application where, hey, we talked about this in class today. Go apply it to something you do out in the world, mm-hmm. then write me a paper about it. You're going to write a lot, but you're writing stuff you know about.
Yeah.
And you're writing stuff you can apply easily because uh-huh. you thought about that as you went in mm-hmm. and did your job or whatever you were writing your paper yeah. on. So I dug that. I liked that a lot.
Much more beneficial in the long run.
It was just... I wouldn't call it easier. It was just much more fun.
Yeah. Yeah, because you felt like you were doing something that meaningful.
Yes.
Yeah. So then you said that you obviously chose TV. Did you know that you wanted to be then a professor of television, or was it just...
Okay. No, yes. I mean, TV was it, and then I started discovering things in TV that I didn't really want to do. So they always say, the old-timers always say, find the area you think you want to work in, then find the specific job within that area. I think that's great advice. That's what I did. I found TV. I knew I really liked it. I just needed to find my place in it. So I first started off in cable. And this is back when we had cable.
Yeah.
That was a good job. It was an easy job. I did a lot of programming, but it wasn't the place. Then a friend of mine at the cable company got a job at a news station. And they were looking for somebody, so he recommended me. So I went off and started doing news. Mm-hmm. I did not like doing news. Covering tragedy every day, I just found it depressing.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Someone's always getting murdered or hit by a car, and you're there right after they're there. Sometimes they're still there.
And you have to, like, desensitize yourself, kind of.
Yes, you have to.
Yeah, you don't have a choice.
I tell people that. We call it newsroom humor. You end up making fun of the most traumatic things just because you got to. I tell people, students from here, you got to learn to leave it home. You can't take it with you every day. And there's no way of solving those problems. You just go report the news, mm-hmm. forget about it, and you're on to the next story. That's not easy to do. I had a hard time doing it. I only worked in news for about a year, and I knew I didn't want to do news. So mm-hmm. I went on and did advertising, which I thought goes back to the Samsonite suitcases.
Oh, yeah.
I'll do advertising. The things that I didn't like about advertising, you were doing five projects with five projects waiting for you. So you really had no time to put. They just wanted those things in and out. They didn't want any creativity. Just put the bare minimum in there. Hey, come on down to Joe's tractor sale where we got. I mean, you're not doing like heavy duty. You're doing local commercials and.
Low quality.
Quality. Fast as you can do it, because the faster you do it, the more they get to make.
Yeah.
You know? So I didn't like that about it. And then in the meantime, I met a professor at a local community college, Lansing Community College, which again is one of the top five community colleges in the United States. And they said they were looking for a director producer. And I put my name up, and I'll be darned if I did not get that job. Mm-hmm. So it drew me back into academia again.
Yeah.
And when I was, as I was working as a director producer, I really started getting the teaching itch again. So they let me teach a couple of gifted and talented classes. Then I worked myself into doing normal university work or community college, college work. And then that's when I went on to get my master's degree, because I decided I wanted to go into teaching. Teaching, I think, is, I think the difficulty of teaching first is finding the right grade.
Yeah.
See, I did elementary school, I didn't realize I wouldn't like it, but I didn't like it. Then I was going to try college, and if I didn't like college, I was going to try high school. I definitely didn't want to do middle school. Middle school teachers are boring. Those people love that job. They love that grade, but not middle school for me.
Yeah.
So, but I got lucky and chose college, and because I like college.
Mm-hmm.
So that became that became my kind of job for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And so how long were you at Lansing Community College?
5 years.
5 years?
Yeah.
And then after that, was that when you found DePaul?
After that, I came here to DePaul. And
how did that happen?
Oh, my God. That's a long story. I had went through a divorce.
Okay.
And... I still had two kids to put through college. And even though community college is good work, I wouldn't call it high paying work. But it wasn't bad.
No, yeah.
But I needed more money. Got two kids to put through college. So I started looking for a job. And director of TV operations, DePaul University, Indiana. I had never been director of anything. I never been to Indiana, and I never even heard of DePaul. So I came down really just to experience the interviews, because I hadn't taken an interview in a while.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll go down there, I'll go through the interviews, see what it's like, see what I need to adjust. It was all day, 8 hours of interviews. You know, it was crazy. And since I didn't want the job, I told them exactly what I thought. You know, I did not, like, gauge what they were looking for.
You just were yourself. That.
I just was totally myself. I thought I was never going to get this job. And they hired me the next day. And then did not necessarily want to move, because not only was it moving, I was moving away from my kids. I was moving away from my lifelong friends. Only 4 hours away, which was so lucky for me.
Yeah.
Because for 21 years, I've made that trip every month, gone up, visited, reconnect with everybody, and stay connected to my kids. So that has worked out really well. So, yeah, that's the story of how I ended up at DePaul. And then I thought I'd only be here 2 years because, A, I didn't want the job.
Everyone always thinks it's like,
yeah, I'm going to come here, get a good school, I'll get it on my resume, head back to Michigan, and then I fell in love with the kids. Oh, my God. Yeah, the student, you don't get students like this at every university. And, yeah, they had me. I mean, fun to teach. They push you as much as you push them. One great thing about DePaul is they allow you to grow. My boss used to say, Larry, I didn't hire you so I could do your job. So he let me grow. Even though I had directed nothing, I grew in that job. And probably my number one backers were the students. They've always had my back. Me and the students here have a special relationship. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
People kind of know me because I have a unusual job where all I deal with is the students all day. I don't really deal with adults all day. I deal with students.
Yeah.
And we have this kind of mutual trust and understanding between each other. We always have. I've always had their back. They've always had my back. You don't get that everywhere.
No.
My daughter was mad because I didn't move back after 2 years. And I kept telling her, I got this dream job. I'm not sure I can leave it. It's a dream job. And she didn't really understand till she graduated from college, got her first job and hated it. And I go, now you know I'm staying. You just don't get jobs like this. And the fact that I could see them once a month, so it wasn't like I was in California and never saw them.
Exactly. And what are your favorite stories or moments from your time as a professor here?
I'm going to say one for sure. There's no way I could get by without saying this. So there was this show. It was a Pi-Fi show. It was called Breakfast with the Babes.
Yeah.
It was started by Nicole Pence and Kai Hawkins. I was brand new here. And they walked in my office one day and asked if I wanted to play a record on their radio show called Breakfast with the Babes. So I did, and I did it for the next every Tuesday for the next 13 years.
It went on for 13 years?
Yes.
Wow.
And I must have went through 6 or 7 sets of Breakfast with the Babes, got to know all of them really well. I mean, you spend every Tuesday with them.
Yeah.
And we never listened to the records. We just, whatever we were playing, we just turned the sound down. We always just kind of caught up with what was going on in their lives, and what was happening, because you got to know them after a while. And I ended up just liking every one of them. And I'm still in contact with every one of them and gone to practically all of their weddings and follow them on Facebook. I mean, that's how I know Dre. That's how I know, you know, all the people that we know together. That's how I got to know them, is through that show. So I would put that as a highlight. There's just no way I could not talk about that show. Any other special highlights? I would put one other down there. And that is the first time I walked in graduation as a professor. Come on. I hated I knew my teachers in elementary school were rolling in their grave when they saw me in my regatta. No way, you know?
Yeah.
But that was like, you know, that was a special feeling to me that I made it. You know, I did it. We may get to talk about this later, but I think setting goals for yourself is a really smart thing to do, because essentially they're paths. And they set out a path. You may, you know, swing out one direction or another once in a while, but you end up, you know, if it's something you really want, you end up going for it. So, mm-hmm. yeah, so that was a goal of mine, and that was like, wow, I did it, and, you know, no, I did yeah. it.
And if you had to say one thing, what do you think is the most important part about being a professor?
I think that one of the things I didn't like about being a professor is the students all thinking that somehow, some way, that we're all priests.
Yeah.
You know, we're human beings. Mm-hmm. We have our good days, we have our bad days. You know, sometimes, you know, you don't have your best day. So it's really important to me that as much as I may not like that, that they look up to you. And it's really important that you keep that always in mind and always come to school, be a professional, and realize that what you do is could have an effect on the students in front of you. And I take that as very important, which maybe before that I didn't as much. Mm-hmm. Here I do.
Yeah, yeah. And what has teaching taught you?
God, how many more questions we got after this?
I have a few more.
What has teaching taught me?
Yeah.
A, to be much more organized than I was. You got to be organized. Mm-hmm. I swore for the longest time, I refused to write things on the calendar. I just think that was an inhuman thing. To lead your life by what was on your calendar, I just thought that was inhuman. Come on, I'm a human being.
Yeah.
I should not have to live by a calendar. Oh, I write everything on the calendar.
I lost my schedule.
I wouldn't remember a thing if I didn't write it down on the calendar. So that teaching definitely, because you have meetings and mm-hmm. and you know your normal stuff that you do, and I have such a multitask job that if I don't write it down, I'm going to forget it. So it's taught me to be more organized, and you know I'm going to keep this or not keep that. I mean, Elizabeth Bush, you know Elizabeth.
Yeah, I love Liz.
Elizabeth told me one day, she goes, "Larry, I want a job like yours, to where you're doing something that you love, but you're helping people while you're doing it."
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. kind of teaching to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what kind of job she wants to find.
Mm-hmm.
And she's on her own journey trying to find that. That's what I love about Liz.
Yeah, she's doing, like, skiing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, she's working out there, but she's trying to find, you know, what I love about your 20s, and I'm not going to get into my 18 to 20 speech, which I could, 18 to 22 speech, which I could. Who am I? What am I? What is my purpose in life? Why am I here, you know? Mm-hmm. And what you end up finding out is there's no answers to any of those questions because you're constantly evolving. So whatever your answer is today doesn't mean that'll be your answer in 5 years. You just kind of, you know, learn as you go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think your 20s are for. I think your 20s are for finding yourself. Don't get too committed too early. You're still really young. And that's what I see Liz going through. I look at her as, yeah, I could work in a corporate. She had a corporate job already lined up for a very famous company. I don't want to mention it, but she just didn't. She goes, "I can always make money, Larry. I can always make money. I'm not sure that's what I want." So that's what she's trying to find out.
Mm-hmm.
What does
this.
She want? You know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can be a short journey, and sometimes, in my case, that was a long journey. But when I finally get there, so worth it.
And you love it.
Just, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to transition into talking about your kids. How many kids do you have?
I have 2 kids, David and Kimberly.
All right. And do you have any particularly funny stories from when they were little?
Funny stories when they were little. Oh, my God.
Or even just parenting in general.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Kim, one time we were going to our first daddy-daughter dance.
Uh-huh.
And it was like February. Sometimes they hold those things really early. Probably because it's Thanksgiving-ish.
Yeah.
And I was nice and dressed up. I had my Sunday shoes on. And Kim was in her pretty outfit. I would say she's probably 2 or 3.
Oh.
And it had snowed a little. And when I walked out of the front door, because I was wearing what we would call hard shoes, formal shoes.
Yeah.
When I stepped down, my heel slipped. And I was going down. And I had Kim in my arms. And your natural reaction when you start to go down is your arms go out. It's just kind of a natural. And so I let her go, and her head was heading straight toward that cement, and I grabbed her leg at the last.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. Oh, that would not have been good.
Yeah, that would have been
And
awful.
It was the same thing with my son, Dave. We were on a rafter. It was a huge whitewater rafter.
Uh-huh.
And I think my kids were maybe 10 or 11 or, you know, 12 and 11, something around there. don't take your kids whitewater rafting. I do not know why we did that. So we're on a whitewater raft trip. The rapids were big. Not big, but big. You can go over easily. So we're going down this rapid, and it's a rough one. And we hit a rock or a bump, and it threw us all up in the air. And because I was a whitewater rafter, I always knew to lean to the inside. That way, if you went up, you were going to land on the inside of the boat.
Yeah.
So when we hit that, I naturally leaned up, and then I looked over at my son, and he's on going his way to the water in the middle of these rapids. He tells me to this day he thought he was going to die.
Probably.
And at the last second, and again, it's not easy to grab a life preserver because you could easily not grab it in the right spot. I happened to grab his life preserver right in the last spot and pulled him in before he...
Oh my gosh.
He's still mad at me for taking him on that raft trip because it scared the heck out of him. And now that I look back at it, I thought, why would you take a kid on a 9 and 10 on a raft trip? Even though they are wearing life preservers.
Yeah, but still.
But let me tell you something about whitewater rafting. It will kill you.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
People die all the time.
I'm sure.
Because you get caught under the rocks.
Yeah.
I mean, rapids are made by rocks, huge boulders. And those things kind of suck you in. And once you're trapped with all that water pressure on you, it will kill you. Oh. And so it was one of the dumbest decisions. I don't know. Even today, I think, why did we do that, you know? So, yeah.
That's crazy.
That's my funny kid stories. I'm sure there's others.
That's great. And what lesson did you stress the most to your kids when they were growing up?
Be yourselves. Mm-hmm. Because I was doing all of these fun news advertising. I drove a news car around. They were, like, so
pretty
impressed.
Cool. Oh, I'm sure.
And I didn't want them to be, like, I really wanted them, that's what I did. Figure out what you want to do. You know, a lot of people want to do what their parents, you know, do for a living. I wanted them, because it was so important to me, because I didn't want to do what my father and mother did. I wanted to do what I wanted to do, but I had to figure that out.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted them to do.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to figure out what they want to do in life. Ironically, Dave ends up an actor, and Kim is a social worker, and her mom's a social worker. So they went and did pretty much what we did in terms of careers or some facsimile of it.
But the fact that you told them to do their own thing just shows that was just
the whole time.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted them to be themselves. How else you can be happy? I mean, I've known people that work jobs to make money so they can do what they want to do.
Okay.
I just think loving what you do every day as a career, that's the best.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's able to find that. I understand that. But when you do, and if you do, it's the best.
Mm-hmm.
To love what you do every day, not think about it. I mean, I never think about not going to work. That's just that's my everyday. That's nice. And and all the students here, they all know I love my job.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I don't hide it. I love my job. I think I got the best job in the world. But did I pay my dues for that?
Oh yeah.
Everybody pays their dues.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is the most rewarding part about being a parent?
Oh, man. You know, I watch my daughter Kim as a mother, and I am just... Not that I didn't think my daughter Kim would be a great mom, but you don't know what they're going to
mm-hmm.
be. I'm sure she was going to be a great
mom.
But she's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just look at her and, I mean, you're not trained for that job.
No.
And she has twins, which you can add a whole nother level of parenting onto that. Having twins is nice when you hear about it, but having twins that first year is rough. Rough.
Could not imagine.
Having one is rough. Having two at the same time, I think of twins totally different. Love my grandkids to death. Funny, smart, great kids. But that first year, I felt sorry for for Kim and her husband because it was miserable, absolutely miserable.
Yeah, really. What would the Larry of today tell himself as a young husband and father?
Tell myself, I think every parent, maybe not every parent, but I think every parent wished they were a better parent on some sort of level. My kids are the best. No, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Never a problem. They were great in school. They were great kids. So people think, oh, naturally, Larry, you'd be a great parent. But even Though I think I was a great parent, I wish I was a better parent. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be my one thing looking back. You can always be better. And I wish I was even a better parent.
And then you, how many grandkids do you have?
Two.
Two, just the twins.
Hudson and Annabelle.
Aw. And what's your favorite part about being a grandpa?
I did not want to be a grandpa. I didn't even like that name. Don't even think about calling me that name.
Of course you didn't.
No, I hate. But as soon as they came down the chute, they had me at hello. I can't say no to them. I mean, what's really cool about being a grandparent is that, and I did not anticipate this, you're like part of their life. Mm-hmm. Like, they look at you like a grandparent. Mm-hmm. Not, I was never close to my grandparents, so I never had that feeling of like, I mean, I knew they were my grandparents, and I probably loved them because they were my dad's mother and father, mm-hmm. but I didn't like see them other than being the parents of my parents. Mm-hmm. With my grandkids, I'm like part of their life. I'm like part of their existence. Uh-huh. That's a totally different feeling. And they love you. I mean, they like love you. Mm-hmm. That, I did not anticipate that. I just thought it would be somehow a representation of what I went through, and it wasn't that at all. And I did not expect that, and I dig that a lot.
Pleasantly surprised.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so going into the final section now, you've done great, as I knew you would. So what event in history has had the biggest impact on you, or had the biggest impact on you?
That's so funny. I tried, after reading your questions, I tried to contact an old friend in Denver who gave me the best advice. Just out of one of those nothing conversations that somebody just says something that affects you the rest of your life. I was working with a guy there. He was kind of like me, grew up in a middle-class family. And we worked with another guy who was like a lot like you guys, just smart beyond smart, could read something once and already know it, mm-hmm. where I would be deep in the manual trying to figure out, he already knows that memorized. And I was so envious. I mean, I was just so envious that this guy had this ability and I did not. And I never forget this guy, his name is Dean Klonecki. I'm still trying to find him in Denver somewhere to thank him for this advice, because he goes, you know, Larry, you can even that out by just outworking them. And it gave me that tool to equal everything. I mean, that's how I made it through college when I hated college. I knew I could make it if I just worked harder. You know, that's how, if I met somebody that was really smarter than me, if I had enough skill and experience that I've gained, I'm just as good as they are.
Yeah.
That it was the best advice. It mm-hmm. gave me a tool that really evened everything. I never had to feel less than. I just had to work harder. Mm-hmm. That was the best advice.
My dad tells me that.
Yeah.
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 And then as you look back on your life, who are the people who have impacted or influenced you the most?
That's a great question, because the Larry that people know at DePaul, especially the students, I think they know me a lot as a mentor, mm-hmm. you know. And that's what I had all the way through my life. And if I had to give a piece of advice, it's to find good mentors. Even when you graduate college, look for good mentors. Mm-hmm. Because they are the ones that generally see it in you, mm-hmm. when you may not see it in yourself, which is very Larry. Mm-hmm. That I tell the students all the time, as soon as I meet them, I see it. But they're just not old enough to see it in themselves yet. So I just kind of draw it out of them so they can see it. And that's what happened to me. I had good mentors starting from Little League Baseball, some dad that decided to coach a 12-year-old team, and that's how I fell in love with baseball. And then when I was in high school, because I had transferred to a burb school, they didn't know me. So even though I was on a team, I didn't play much. Uh-huh. But then when I played summer ball, other coaches thought I was phenomenal. And again, they kind of guided my career away from high school, and I became an all-star and played baseball probably for the next, 40 years. I retired when I was 57. When I moved to Indianapolis, I played hardball in there. 7 championships in a row.
Okay.
No ego, just the facts.
Just 7
championships in a row. That's a funny story, too, because when I came here, I found out that Indianapolis had a hardball league for different ages.
Yeah.
And again, when I move to a city, I generally play sports.
Yeah.
That's how I meet people. So I got on a team, and they were putting another team together of a bunch of just nobodies. And because I have a very Arab last name, Abed, A-B-E-D, they thought I was Iranian. Hey, nothing against Iranians, but I don't think they know a lot about baseball. So they just stuck me on this team. And same with my third baseman. He had a hamstring pull, and they have you try out. He couldn't move, so they put him on his team. So they thought they had this ragtag team that won the next seven championships.
Joke's on them.
No, that was good.
That's great.
I always feel proud about
that. Oh, I love that. And do you have a favorite memory or time period of your entire life so far?
I like being a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when back in Detroit, prior to that 67 riot that really just ruined that city, prior to that, we were sports 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, and we rode our bikes everywhere. Mm-hmm. And our parents never knew where we were at. So we were always, you know, playing. There were so many kids, we would have sports games against the block that was next to us. Because they had so many kids.
Yeah.
It was just a fun time of life. In fact, in my will, I have that, you know, I want to be cremated. And I told them, find any Little League baseball field, and that's where I would like my ashes.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spread, yeah.
Wow.
So that was my favorite time.
Okay.
Other than having my kids.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to pick a pinpoint.
Oh, yeah. A time. Yeah. But that was special to me.
Mm-hmm. And do you regret anything?
I thought a lot about this. I have been blessed.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely blessed. Some people call it luck. Yeah, really lucky. But every goal that I had set out for myself, yeah, I didn't become a Major League Baseball pitcher because I didn't have the genetics for it. So, no. I don't even know why I went down that road with that question.
You've been blessed.
I have been blessed. Oh, that's right. Because I achieved every goal that I set out for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I doubted myself.
Yeah.
I just kept going. And, you know, I may not be the best at everything, but I'm really good at a lot of things. And I think I have my own kind of special gifts that are unique to myself. I think this, going through a divorce was not, I don't wish that on anybody, but I ended up here.
Mm-hmm.
I went from the worst situation to the best situation. That's
mm-hmm.
all of my life. Going back to that fight that I had in that backyard.
Uh-huh.
Whoever knew it was going to turn out like that?
Yeah.
Coming to DePaul was the exact same thing. Whatever I thought it was going to be, ended up being 10 times better.
Mm-hmm.
This coming to DePaul, and I know that we're here, and I know this interview's taking place here, and I probably have about three more years before I retire. I mean, it's going to, in my life, it'll go down as one of the best things I ever did for myself.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, not even a question.
And what advice would you give to my generation?
Yes. I thought about this a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think drove me was that I always had a belief in myself. Didn't matter my circumstances, didn't matter how much money we had or didn't have, how educated or undereducated I was. I always thought I was going to be more than the things that were around me. And I see that in my kids, and that's what I would say. I would say, believe in yourself. Listen to that voice. That voice within generally is never wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly have followed it. Find it. If you don't know where it is, find it. It's there, and it will lead you. And just keep, you can, people get into, you know, America. I mean, it's a land of opportunity. You can be whatever you want as long as you work toward it.
Mm-hmm.
You may not get there, but you get pretty darn close.
Yeah.
And all that, to me, comes out of self-belief. And that would be my one advice.
No, that's great. And what do you believe is the most important thing in life?
God, I hate these questions. The most important thing in life. All right. What do I think is the most important thing in life? I would think to be able to give and receive love.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do that, you'll have a pretty good life.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. And last question, what do you hope to be remembered by?
Oh, I used to tell kids all the time, in 10,000 years, they ain't going to care. They're not going to care. I think that people will remember that I was very relatable, no matter mm-hmm. what your age. I think they will always appreciate that mentor part of me that kind of helped them through this 18 to 22 years where a lot goes on.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, you're transitioning from a teenager to an adult.
Mm-hmm.
That is tough.
Yeah.
And I always try to be there for them for that as much as I can. And the amount of appreciation that I've gotten for the job that I have done here, it's so funny. I would get these notes, and I got a ton of them on my wall, that all kind of have this one phrase to it that I had the hardest time accepting. It was, Larry, my college experience would have never been the same had I not met you. And I didn't know. I could not let that in for the longest time. It was almost like too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I would read it in so many letters. And the students, because like I said, they've always had my back. You know, they understood that that's how I felt, that I would not allow that. And I'm telling you, probably over a period of 4 or 5 years, they all kind of worked on me a little bit to kind of accept that compliment.
Yeah, you should.
And know that you deserve that compliment. And I finally did. I mean, now I'm able to hear it and listen to it and appreciate it. And that's another thing, whereas, you know, kids 18 to 22 can sometimes see somebody in their 60s and see what they need and give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
I got a cool job.
Great.
I work with cool people.
Oh my goodness. That was great.
Yeah. All right. That's it.
Relatable, humble, intelligent, adventurous. The list of adjectives used to describe Larry could go far beyond this small one provided. Larry has lived a unique life. Never looking too far ahead, just taking each day and season of his life as it is, an opportunity to discover something new about himself and others. Larry has a welcoming nature about him, making each person he encounters feel as if they have known him forever. My DePauw experience truly would not have been the same had I not met him, and I know for a fact many others feel the exact same way.